Chapter 50. The Sandecker, the audacious plan to come in through the back door of Cerro El Capirote in a wild attempt to save Lauren Smith and Rudy Gunn, was nothing less than suicidal. He knew the reasons Pitt had for risking his life: rescuing a loved one and a close friend from death, evening the score with a pair of murderers, and snatching a wondrous treasure from the hands of thieves. Those were grounds for justification of other men, not Pitt. His motivation went much deeper: to challenge the unknown, laugh at the devil, and dare the odds. Those were his stimulants. As for Giordino, Pitt's friend since childhood, Sandecker never doubted for an instant the rugged Italian would follow Pitt into a molten sea of lava. Sandecker could have stopped them, but he hadn't built what was thought of by many as the finest, most productive, and budget-efficient agency in the government without taking his fair share of risky gambles. His fondness for marching out of step with official Washington made him a source of respect as well as envy. The other directors of national bureaus would never consider hands-on control of a hazardous project in the field that might run the risk of censure from Congress and force resignation by presidential order. Sandecker's only regret was that this was one adventure he couldn't lead himself. He paused after carrying a load of dive gear from the old Chevy down the tubular bore and looked at Peter Duncan, who sat beside the sinkhole, busily overlaying a transparency of a topographical map onto a hydrographic survey of known underground water systems. The two charts were enlarged to the same scale, enabling Duncan to trace the approximate course of the subterranean river. Around him, the others were setting out the dive gear and float equipment. "As the crow flies," Duncan said to no one specifically, "the distance between Satan's sinkhole and Cerro El Capirote works out to roughly 30 kilometers. Sandecker looked down into the water of the sinkhole. "What quirk of nature formed the river channel?" "About 60 million years ago," answered Duncan, "a shift in the earth caused a fault in the limestone, allowing water to seep in and carve out a series of connecting caverns." The admiral turned to Pitt. "How long do you think it will take you to get there?" "Running with a current of 9 knots," said Pitt, "we should make the treasure cavern in 3 hours. Duncan looked doubtful. "I have never seen a river that didn't meander. If I were you, I'd add another 2 hours to my estimated time of arrival." "The wallowing wind bag will make up the time," Giordino said confidently as he stripped off his clothes. "Only if you have clear sailing all the way. You're entering the unknown. There is no second-guessing the difficulties you might encounter. Submerged passages extending 10 kilometers or more, cascades that fall the height of a 10-story building, or unnavigable rapids through rocks. Whitewater rafters have a saying: if there is a rock, you'll strike it. If there is an eddy, you'll get caught in it." "Anything else?" Giordino grinned, unshaken by Duncan's dire forecast. "Like vampires or gluttonous monsters with 6 jaws of barracuda teeth lurking in the dark to have us for lunch?" "I'm only trying to prepare you for the unexpected," Duncan said. "The best theory I can offer that might give you a small sense of security is that I believe the main section of the river system flows through a fault in the earth. If I'm right, the channel will travel in an erratic path, but with a reasonably level depth." Pitt patted him on the shoulder. "We understand and we're grateful. But at this stage, all Al and I can do is hope for the best, expect the worst, and settle for anything in between." "When you swam out of the sinkhole's feeder stream into the river," Sandecker asked Duncan, "was there an air pocket?" "Yes, the rock ceiling rose a good 10 meters above the surface of the river." "How far did it extend?" "We were hanging on to the fixed guideline for dear life against the current and only got a brief look. A quick sweep of my light failed to reveal the end of the gallery." "With luck, they'll have an air passage the entire trip." "A lot of luck," said Duncan skeptically. his eyes still drawn to the chart overlays. As underground rivers go, this one is enormous. In sheer length, it must be the longest unexplored subterranean watercourse through a field of karst. Giordino hesitated in strapping on a small console containing pressure gauges, a compass, and a depth meter to his arm. "What do you mean by karst?" Karst is the term for a limestone belt that is penetrated by a system of streams, passages, and caverns. "It makes one wonder how many other unknown rivers are flowing under the earth," said Pitt. Lee Hunt and his River Canyon of Gold, another source of jokes by California and Nevada state hydrologists, now bear heavy investigation, admitted Duncan. "Because of what you discovered here, I'll guarantee that closed mines will take a second look." "Maybe I can do my bit for the cause," said Pitt, holding up a small waterproof computer before strapping it to his forearm. "I'll try to program a survey and plot data on the river's course as we go." "I'll be grateful for all the scientific data you can bring back," acknowledged Duncan. "Finding a golden treasure under Cerro El Capirote may fire the imagination, but in reality it's incidental to the discovery of a water source that can turn millions of acres of desert into productive farm and ranch land. Perhaps the gold can fund the pumping systems and pipelines for such a project," said Pitt. "Certainly a dream to consider," added Sandecker. Giordino held up an underwater camera. "I'll bring back some pictures for you." "Thank you," said Duncan gratefully. "I'd also appreciate another favor." Pitt smiled. "Name it." He handed Pitt a plastic packet in the shape of a basketball, but half the size. "A dye tracer called fluorescein yellow with optical brightener. I'll buy you the best Mexican dinner in the Southwest if you'll throw it into the river when you reach the treasure chamber. That's all. As it floats along the river, the container will automatically release the dye over regular intervals. You want to record where the river outlet emerges into the Gulf." Duncan nodded. "That will give us an important hydrologic link." He was also going to ask if Pitt and Giordino might take water samples, but thought better of it. He had already pushed them as far as he dared. If they were successful in navigating the river as far as the hollow interior of Cerro El Capirote, then he and his fellow scientists could mount subsequent scientific expeditions based on the data acquired by Pitt and Giordino. Over the next 10 minutes, Pitt and Giordino geared up and went over the plans for their journey. They had made countless dives together under 100 different water and weather conditions, but none of this distance through the depths of the earth. Like doctors discussing a delicate brain operation, no detail was left to chance. Their survival depended on it. Communication signals were agreed upon, buddy-breathing strategies in case of air loss, the drill for inflating and deflating the wallowing windbag, who was in control of what equipment. All procedures were deliberated and jointly approved. "I see you're not wearing a pressurized dry suit," observed Sandecker as Pitt pulled on his wetsuit. "The water temperature is a few degrees on the cool side, but warm enough so we don't have to worry about hypothermia. A wetsuit gives us more freedom of movement than a dry suit that is pressurized by air tanks. This will prove a dire necessity if we find ourselves struggling in the water to right the wallowing windbag after it is flipped over by raging rapids." Instead of the standard backpack, Pitt attached his air tanks to a harness around his hips for easier access through narrow passages. He was also festooned with breathing regulators, air lines leading to dual-valve manifolds, pressure gauges, and a small backup bottle filled with pure oxygen for decompression. Then came weight belts and buoyancy compensators. "No mixed gas?" queried Sandecker. "We'll breathe air," Pitt replied as he checked his regulators. "What about the danger of nitrogen narcosis?" "Once we're clear of the bottom of the sinkhole and the lower part of the feeder stream before it upslopes to the river, we'll avoid any further deep diving like the plague." "Just see that you stay well above the threshold," Sandecker warned him, "and don't go below 30 meters. And once you're afloat, keep a sharp eye for submerged boulders." Those were the words the Admiral spoke. What he didn't say was, "If something goes wrong and you need immediate help, you might as well be on the third ring of Saturn." In other words, there could be no rescue or evacuation. Pitt and Giordino made a final pre-dive check of each other's equipment by the side of the pool and tested their quick-release buckles and snaps to ensure their smooth removal in an emergency. Instead of divers' hoods, they strapped construction workers' hard hats to their heads with dual-sealed miner's lamps on the front. Then they poised on the edge of the sinkhole and slipped into the water. Sandecker and Duncan hoisted a long, pressure-sealed aluminum canister and struggled to lower one end into the sinkhole. The canister, measuring 1 meter in width by 4 in length, was articulated in the middle for easier maneuvering through tight spaces. Heavy and cumbersome on land from the lead ballast required to give it neutral buoyancy, it was easily moved by a diver underwater. Giordino bit on his mouthpiece, adjusted his mask, and took hold of a hand grip on the forward end of the canister. He threw a final wave as he and the canister slowly sank together below the water surface. Pitt looked up from the water and shook hands with Duncan. "Whatever you do," Duncan warned him, "mind you don't let the current sweep you past the treasure chamber. From that position to where the river emerges into the gulf has to be over 120 kilometers. "Don't worry. We won't spend any more time down there than we have to." "May God dive with you," said Duncan. "All heavenly company will be warmly welcomed," said Pitt sincerely. Then he gripped Sandecker's hand. "Keep a tequila on ice for me, Admiral." "I wish there was another way into the mountain." Pitt shook his head. "It can only be done with a dive raft operation." "Bring Lauren and Rudy back," replied Sandecker, fighting off a surge of emotion. "You'll see them soon," Pitt promised. And then he was gone.